The French Revolution, Napoleon. Napoleon in Exile, 1815 to 1821. Today's show is Napoleon is Informed of His Fate, which is part two. And we have part one of Lord Bunbury's account of that meeting. Now, this is a record of the interview that is extremely detailed. And I'm going to break it into two parts so you can kind of digest it. And then the other main account, which is Lord Keith, he was well aware of the fact that Bunbury had produced this very large document, and he just needed to do some comments on it. I should point out that Bunbury planned to write a memoir, which is one of the reasons why he did this in such detail. But here we go. We went on board, which would be Lord Keith and Lord Bunbury. We went on board the Bellerophon between 11 and 12 o'clock. Bonaparte was alone in the inner cabin. We were announced and were admitted immediately. After I had been introduced and Bonaparte had put a few trivial questions to us, Lord Keith produced a copy of the letter from Lord Melville containing the orders of His Majesty's government and tendered it to Bonaparte. He inquired if it was in French, and on being told that it was in English, he observed that it would be useless to him and that it would be necessary to translate it. Upon this, Lord Keith began to read it aloud in French. Bonaparte appeared not to hear very distinctly, nor to comprehend, and after a line or two had been read, he took the paper from Lord Keith's hand and proposed to me that I should translate it. I believe he meant that I should make a written translation, but I preferred reading it aloud in French. Napoleon listened attentively to the whole without interrupting me, and appeared as if he had previously been aware of what was being communicated to him. At the conclusion, Lord Keith asked Bonaparte if he wished to have a written translation made, but he answered no, that he comprehended the substance perfectly, that the translation had been sufficiently good. He received the paper and laid it upon the table, and after a pause began by declaring his solemn protest against this proceeding of the British government, that they had not the right to dispose of him in that manner, and he appealed to the British people and to the laws of the country. Bonaparte asked what was the tribunal, or if there was not a tribunal where he might prefer his appeal against the illegality and the injustice of the decision taken by the British government. I came here voluntarily, he said, mon plaisir sur foyer de votre nation, and to obtain the rights of hospitality. I am not even a prisoner of war. If I were a prisoner of war, you would be bound to treat me selon droit de gens. But I am come to this country a passenger on board one of your ships of war after a previous negotiation with its commander. If he had told me I was to be a prisoner, I should not have come. I asked him if he was willing to receive me and my suite on board and carry me to England. Captain Maitland answered that he would, and this after having received and after telling me that he had received special orders from his government concerning me. In coming on board a British warship, I confided myself to the hospitality of the British nation as much as if I had entered one of their towns. I protest to be being sent thither, and I protest against being imprisoned in a fortress in this country. I demand to be received as an English citizen. I know indeed that I cannot be admitted to the rights of an Englishman at first. Some years are required to entitle one to be domiciled. Well, let the Prince Regent place me during that time under any surveillance he may think proper. Let me be put in a country house in the center of the island, 30 leagues from the sea. Place a commissioner about me to examine my correspondence and report my actions. and if the Prince Regent should require my parole, perhaps I would give it. There I might have a certain degree of personal liberty, and I could enjoy the liberty of literature. In St. Helena, I should not live 3 months. With my habits and constitution, it would be immediate death. I am used to riding 20 leagues a day. What am I to do on this little rock at the end of the world? The climate is too hot for me. No, I will not go to St. Helena. Botany Bay is better than St. Helena. If your government wishes to put me to death, they may kill me here. It is not worthwhile to send me to St. Helena. I prefer death to St. Helena. And what good is my death to you? I can do you no harm. I am no longer a sovereign. I am a simple individual. Besides, time and affairs are altered. What danger could result from my living as a private citizen, private person, I should say, in the heart of England under surveillance and restricted in any way the government might imagine necessary? Bonaparte returned frequently to the circumstances under which he had come aboard the Bellerophon, insisted that he had been perfectly free in his choice, and that he preferred confiding to hospitality and the generosity of the British people rather than take any other course. Why should I have not gone to my father-in-law or to the Emperor Alexander, who is my personal friend? We have become enemies because he wanted to annex Poland to his dominions, and my policy prevented him. But otherwise, he was my friend, and he would not have treated me in this manner. If your government acts thus, it will disgrace itself in the eyes of Europe, and even your own people will disapprove and blame its conduct. Besides, you do not know, perhaps, what a feeling my death will create both in France and Italy, and how greatly the character of England will suffer if my blood rests there. There is a high opinion of justice and honor of England. If you kill me, your reputation will be lost in France and Italy, and it will cost the loss of many Englishmen. There never has been a similar instance in the history of the world. And what was there to force me to the step I took? The tricolor was still flying in Bordeaux, at Nantes, and at Rochefort. The army had not by then surrendered. I could have joined them. I could have chosen to remain in France. What could have prevented my remaining concealed for years among a people who were all attached to me? But I preferred to settle as a private citizen, private individual, in England. Now, the letter goes on for a longer period of time, but I wanted to stop here. There's no sense going through the whole letter at this point. I want to break it into two parts. It's unusual. Most people don't really get to this part. This is a section of Napoleonic history that is not widely studied. It's sometimes hardly mentioned. He loses Waterloo. He gets exiled. He dies. And frequently, that's it. In my class, I bring him back because the return to Saunders is an important moment in French history, and ultimately helps to set up the circumstances leading to the restoration of the Bonapartes in power, Napoleon III, for example. So hearing the documents, hearing what is going on, he's going to throw a tantrum before this is all over with. But it's interesting to note his complaints about St. Helena. It did have a bad climate. It was hot. It's equatorial. But, of course, he will be able to ride his horse and do other things there as well. It's just away from everything. It's interesting to note that he's not complaining of being allowed to go to America. He's trying to stick with this theme that England should be giving him hospitality. I would also point out that if you read the letter, Napoleon's name is not the French spelling. It is the Italian spelling. It is Bonaparte. And that is Napoleon stopped using that spelling, stopped signing documents with that spelling while he was you know, well, after he comes back from the Egyptian campaign. So they're not referring to him as Bonaparte. And they're also making references to him as a general. We have talked about this a lot in this particular topic. The European countries can't say he's an emperor, because that means the French Revolution was successful and that it was valid, and he is a valid ruler. They're operating under the premise that the French Revolution removed the legitimate king and put usurpers in charge. Therefore, they now need to be recognized, which is why you didn't have hardly any diplomats at his wedding to Josephine and his coronation as emperor and all of this other stuff going on and on and on. And the business about him dying will be an issue later, because the last thing that the British wanted to happen was to have him be assassinated or poisoned, same thing, while he was under their protection or under their care. So when he does indeed go to St. Helena, he has excellent medical staff provided by the British, because they're just paranoid about somebody knocking him off, and then they're going to get blamed for it. So that's something that we'll touch on later on. So there's some interesting, you see his argument, and ultimately, after we look at Keith's comments on this meeting, and this is a historic meeting, it doesn't take much brain power to realize, man, I'm going to have a meeting, we're going to discuss how Napoleon feels about being told he's going to be exiled to St. Helena. There's going to be some great stuff here. I need to record it so that for posterity we can have this. It is interesting to note that Napoleon's secretaries, no one of his side was there taking notes. We have the two gentlemen who basically wrote this down almost immediately after leaving. So it's an interesting setup. Now, the sources for this, Napoleon in Exile, The 50 Days of Napoleon in England by Duhamel, Napoleon After Waterloo by Thornton, and Napoleon St. Helena by Gilbert Martineau. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com. Ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs, check out the souvenirs. If you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us with a single donation, or sign up for a few dollars a month to keep us rolling. Thank you very much.